being from the local movement, and highlight the issue of the first term of holy name. Reading from the Theology of the Holy Name, Section B, the transcendental text of the Holy Name. One, the Holy Name revives one's dormant eternal Christian consciousness. As a snake-bitten man is brought back to consciousness by the chanting of certain mantras, so one in the unconscious state of material life can be revived by hearing the mantra. In the Garuda Purana, the stress on hearing is expressed very nicely. It is said there, the state of conditioned life in the material world is just like a man lying unconscious, having been bitten by a snake. This is because both such unconscious states can be ended by the sound of a mantra. When a man is snake-bitten, he does not die immediately, but first becomes unconscious and remains in a comatose condition. Anyone who is in the material world is also sleeping, as he is ignorant of his actual self, or his actual duty, and of his relationship with God. So materialistic life means that one is bitten by the snake of Maya, illusion, and thus, without any Krishna consciousness, he is almost dead. Now the so-called dead man, bitten by a snake, can be brought back again to life by the chanting of some mantra. There are expert chanters of these mantras who can perform this feat. Similarly, one can be brought back into Krishna consciousness from the deadly unconscious state of material life by hearing the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
By chanting the holy name, one's heart is purified, and one's original Krishna consciousness is awakened. The understanding of Krishna consciousness is innate in every living entity, and it is already developed to some extent when the living entity takes the human body. It is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 22:7, Nitya Sriha Krishna Prem, Sadhya Bhavana, Ramanadu Sriha Jitya, Parade Vida. Pure love of Krishna is eternally established in the hearts of living entities. It is not something to be gained from another source. When the heart is purified by hearing and chanting, the living entity naturally awakens. Since Krishna consciousness is inherent in every living entity, everyone should be given a chance to hear about Krishna. Simply by hearing and chanting Shravana Kirtan, one's heart is directly purified, and one's original Krishna consciousness is immediately awakened. Krishna consciousness is not artificially imposed upon the heart, it is already there. When one chants the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the heart is cleansed of all material contamination. This Krishna consciousness is already there, the soul is by nature God conscious, not that it's something else. It's not something added to one's consciousness. It's just a matter of we become unconscious of the actual natural position. And just like a child when it's born, its natural position is to become attached to the parents. That's its natural position. But unfortunately, the living entities, having turned away from Krishna, it appears something foreign. But it's not. It's a matter of purifying the heart and allowing the natural Krishna consciousness to shine forth. This is actually what's happening. This is the actual process. So then, by chanting, then this is effective. This is the most powerful, this is the natural way, is that the purification is there and you're in association directly with Krishna and his internal potency. So then that natural affection for Krishna will be awakened. Number two, the role of the holy name in progression of devotional service. Regulative and spontaneous hearing and chanting in the development of pure devotion. If, by good fortune, a living entity develops faith in Krishna, he begins to associate with devotees. When one is encouraged in devotional service by the association of devotees, One becomes free from all unwanted contamination by following the regulative principles and chanting and hearing. When one is free from all unwanted contamination, he advances with firm faith. When firm faith and devotional service awakens, the taste for hearing and chanting also awakens. After taste is awakened, a deep attachment arises, and from that attachment, the seed of love of Krishna grows in the heart. When that ecstatic emotional state intensifies, it is called love of Godhead. Such love is life's ultimate goal and the reservoir of pleasure. Chaitanya Charitamrita, I believe, 23.9.13. This is the purport. If, due to some righteous activities which provoke devotional service, one is influenced by the service attitude to take shelter of the good association of pure devotees, he develops attachment for hearing and chanting. By developing chanting and hearing, one can advance further and further in regulated devotional service to the Supreme Lord. As one so advances, his misgivings about devotional service and his attraction towards the material world proportionally diminish. By advancing in hearing and chanting, a devotee becomes more firmly fixed in his faith, and gradually his initial faith develops into a taste for devotional service. And that taste develops into attachment. When attachment becomes pure, it exhibits the two characteristics of bhava and rati. When rati increases, it is called love of God. And love of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life. So we see here is what Chaitanya that express this, that through chanting, then that is what takes us through the whole process of shraddha prema. And one develops love, faith in the devotional process, then one takes up the association of devotees. In that position, then by the practice of devotional service, then the anarthas are removed. You notice here in both, they didn't mention the Vajna Kriya. But the point is the Vajna Kriya is the chanting of the holy name, and that will get rid of the anarthas. So Lord Chaitanya specifically just said the anarthas. But, and Śrīla Prabhupāda has expanded that to point out the misgivings. One misgivings. And attraction of the world. See, there's a difference between a doubt and a misgiving. A doubt means it just doesn't make sense. Right? If you've heard it and it doesn't quite add up, at least in your own mind, you have heard something in Krishna consciousness, but you can't logically understand it. That's called a doubt. So it's purely intellectual. Right? But a misgiving is different. Misgiving includes the mind, because that is what we nowadays we call issues, right? This is the old word misgiving, but now we call it issues. It sounds a whole lot better, right? Because it separates it from yourself. So then it's so much easier to yell and scream, because then you don't have to take responsibility for it, because obviously it's an actual issue. Everybody should see the importance of it. But a misgiving, but the real point is it's a misgiving because within your own heart, you don't like it. Even if it logically makes sense, you still won't accept it. That's the difference. A doubt will be, it doesn't make sense, you logically explain it, it makes sense, then it's accepted. Misgiving, doesn't matter how logical it is, you're still not going to accept it. So misgiving is deep. Misgiving is actually a problem. Right? Does that make sense? So misgivings are much more difficult to deal with. So by the chanting of the holy name, these can be removed. One's attachment to the material energy can be removed. Right? Attachment for the material energy doesn't mean that you're not going to be dealing with it, because there's not some other nature for you to deal with. Does that make sense? You're in the material world. You're always going to be dealing with material energy. But because it's being dealt with in relationship to Krishna, therefore, it can give you also a transcendental result. Right? But, so, this is important to understand, that giving up attachment doesn't mean that you're not dealing with the same field. Right? It just means that you're dealing now in the field in a pure state, rather than an impure state, in a progressive way, rather than a non-progressive way. So, but, a major blockage to this is misgivings. Right? These misgivings are actually what gets in your way, because even though it's obvious that you could do something, you won't do it. Right? If it's doubt, you may even do it. I don't understand, it doesn't make sense to me, but you know, okay, that's what you're supposed to do. But misgiving is even though I should do it, I know I should do it, I don't want to do it. Does that make sense? So, by the chanting of the holy name, by the proper focus, then one can progress beyond these. That's why it's so important to always continue the chanting. So, if misgivings arise, one should not give up the chanting process. Otherwise, how one can get over, how one can get beyond the misgivings. Any questions?
So if someone has a misgiving about chanting, how to...
Someone has a misgiving about chanting. How would you have a misgiving about chanting?
It won't give you a result.
It won't give you a result. Then you'd have to be, that generally then would be, but now do they have faith in the association of devotees? Do they have faith in the devotional process?
Or if you can call it faith, if you don't have a faith in it.
No, but I'm just saying, is that there or not? Because it sounds to me like you're actually starting from the beginning. You know, here it says, if by good fortune we begin to develop faith in Krishna, he begins to associate. Then when you associate, then you take up the chanting. So it would appear that it means it sounds like they haven't gotten faith in the process and taken up seriously association process. Otherwise, then the chanting would naturally come. So it's just a matter of then, in that case, then don't worry about the chanting as much as worrying about, you know, them taking prasad and, you know, like being prophet and everything like that. Does that make sense? You know, then they'll chant. Because the point is, most of the time in the beginning, they just like devotees and like, you know, prasad and like talking the philosophy. So, but if they're not chanting, it just means that, or that they're not interested, they don't, they're worried about things. Just continue the process. Because as they become purified, then they will naturally come. They'll naturally be inclined to change. You know, I mean, you can discuss if there is some problem, but don't push it because it's a misgiving. Right? It's an intellectual thing, you can discuss it, and having discussed it, you know, to their satisfaction, then it'll make it easy for them. But if it's a misgiving, then one needs to give it more time. You know, just let the purification process work. You know, so there's other avenues, taking the shot, you know, hearing the philosophy like that. Because generally, it's like someone who is more attached to material activities, they generally wouldn't have a problem with chanting, because chanting is an activity. So they're attached to activities, so then the chanting would naturally go along with it. Though it may be sentimental, but in any case, the effect is there. Those who would have more of a misgiving to chant would probably be more on the intellectual platform, where they're not attached to activities. They consider, intellectual, engagement as more of an elevating process. So then you would have to use prasad and philosophical discussions to go attach this. And then with time, as they become purified, then they won't mind doing activity. But the tendency is the yami is not interested in karma. They lower activity like that. You know, and so then maybe people will get something to be noticed, and so then their ego and stuff will be disturbed.
Maharaj, what about the situation where someone's not a newcomer, but they've been practicing Krishna consciousness for a considerable length of time, 10, 20 years, and they maybe get involved in some situation materially which reduces their japa, which reduces their chanting, and they get caught in like a sort of a vortex down. How would we deal with that if we're in that situation?
How would you deal with, someone who was chanting and then by their material engagement don't have don't find time to chant. Basically, it's association. Because by association, then they become inspired. You know, because time is there. Because you can't be absorbed in material activities and not do something to balance it. Right? It means work needs to be balanced by recreation. So they have the time. It's just that they're using it in mundane recreation, like that. Unless somebody's just fallen into the trap of mudha, where it's just hard work and just, you know, I say, just no respite in that way. But then by association, then you'll become more inspired, and then they'll make some adjustments and stuff like that. But generally, that means, so that can happen. That would be one thing, but that would be unnoticed by them. You know what I'm saying? That kind of vice, they don't notice they're not chanting. They don't have any issue about it. They don't have any, you know, other idea or philosophy behind it. The other one is where they're more dynamic, not just under the, you know, natural, the normal, just plodding along. They're dynamic. They committed themselves to more work for either more economic or social gain. And so then, for them, then it means they're aware of what they're doing. So they're also aware that they're not chanting. And they appreciate that or not appreciate that. But they're aware of it. So then it's a matter of, by association, then they can become inspired again. And then they're intelligent enough to work out a plan how to work the chanting in. But the association needs to be there, because you can see is that it's by association then one is able to remove the material obstacles. It's not something else. So good association. So that's why we would see that, like Srila Prabhupada, is if anybody would have difficulty in the devotional service, they would be put into a situation of better association. That would purify, because Prabhupada knows the science like that. It's not the political science, of course, it's the devotional science. Like political science, then of course you want to distance yourself as far from anyone who has any tinge or taint of anything material. That's a very bad thing, right? You're in prison and everybody is a prisoner. But anybody who did something wrong in the prison, then all the other prisoners naturally distance themselves from that life. It's a very unique, it's kind of like a closed, it's a closed door club, let's say, if I'm politically correct, like that. And I would recommend it like that. Therefore, they recommend, you know, solitary. Anybody who's done something wrong, because that in their mind is the most ultimate purificatory process. Like that, not faith in the holy name, not faith in the association of devotees and devotional servants. But what to do? It's a misgiving. It's a misgiving. So the main thing we see that comes back is association. That's the main thing. Good association. Then it makes things work. Good association means associating with people who are more advanced. Like that. Is that okay? And that are inspiring to you as a person. Something else? Yes.
Yeah. Who have the struggle, but are more keen on philanthropy and altruistic activities in China?
Why do you say that they have faith?
They have faith in Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but chanting such. They have.
No, but in here, then you're actually. See, the problem's not that, okay, there's a God. God creates religion, and the subdivision of religion is morality. So basically, they're theistic moralists. Right? So they're moralists. So it's not that they have faith in devotional service. They have faith that there's a God. You know what I'm saying? So many people in the world have faith that there's a God, but devotion to him is not necessarily the main drive. Be good, be nice, do good unto others. You know, it's basically a social position because it's God's creation, therefore you should deal with God's creation nicely, but more as a social position rather than a devotional position. You understand? So it's just a matter of association, you know, hearing the philosophy so we understand that there's something beyond the social. Not that they should give up the social position. The social position is fine. Means you need to take care of society, you need to deal nicely. But you can't take that as the ultimate goal because it will not give you satisfaction. Right? Neither the person that you're dealing with nor yourself. Like that, it's only part of the equation. Right? The full equation means you have to take it beyond to even why should we be nice to others, right? Because that's the nature of the entity. The living entity has to feel needed. He has to feel part of something. He has to feel that he has relationships with others. That's why the social element is important. Because it's the nature of the soul. But the ultimate nature of the soul is serving God. So if you only take one part of the nature and not the other, that's why we say it's not specifically religious, it's social. Right? Because religious means that you have to take the complete picture, right? That makes sense. Okay. So, basically by association, then one can slowly expand their understanding. So it's good that they're religious in that way, meaning that they accept God. It's good that they have, you know, that they're interested in helping others, but they should understand what the ultimate help and what's really there. So things are not planning things. You know, it's like we distribute the shop, we don't distribute food. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Yes.
Human, it didn't say they'll become devotees.
But because they've taken prashad, there'll be an inclination towards more agyata sukriti. Right? So when that agyata sukriti increases to a point, then it turns into shraddha, into faith. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So then any kind of association is important like that. So, and for generally for living entities, they like variety, so the more that it's there, the better. Like that. But you find whatever works for a particular individual. You know, they don't really listen to the text, they don't read the books, then it needs to be more personal. If by that personal association, then they'll study the books, hear the text, then, you know, they'll get more done over time, because you can't spend all the time with them. So on their own, then they can also then accept. Basically, this Krishna consciousness is practical, so it's just whatever works. Is it a benefit to eat prashad? Heat up again. Heat up again. I mean, you already heated it up once. Now you want to know if it's offensive to heat it a second time.
Yeah, because the food is first time you offer Krishna, and then you can have food for like the next day, then prashad.
So you want to know if reheating prashad, not heating it up again, means reheating it for the second time. You're talking about reheating it the first time. Second time. So reheating it the first time is okay. The most fun is when you're in, you know, countries that don't speak English. They ask what a word means and you give some synonyms for it, and that's a completely different thing. It's not really recommended. But the point is if it's going to be between you eating it or not eating it, then better you eat it. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Makes sense if you didn't get it. Okay. What didn't you get?
Because I don't know the word that if you eat the prashad of my name, it's never offended.
But he was hot the first time. How does that work out? The general principle is probably in life devotees eating the shot. It's one thing if you're just warming it up, that's one thing, but a lot of times when they remake it into other preparations and do all kinds of things with it, that wasn't so important. That probably reflects.
I think I want one example of one of my main is, for example, we get like a mama water and then boil it. Consider that tortillator in there, and it's not different conversion, it's like we're burning him.
Maybe he was hot the first time, it's like he was hot milk, and then so that time he wouldn't burn.
What?
You know what I'm saying? It, don't use those things on it. It's a matter of respect for it. In any case, it's like this. Reheating is one thing, so you have to really seriously consider here. Reheating rice, vegetables, water, medicine, and oil and ghee twice, it turns toxic. And, but you make tea for medicine and it gets cold, you reheat it, it's not medicine anymore. You understand? So, that's why the general principle is you don't generally reheat things anyway. That they very, very careful in these things. I'm just saying that the point is this. See, the problem is if you want a yes or no answer, you can go on very confidently doing whatever you're doing. Going like clear black and white, 100% zero. The point is reheating prashad isn't necessarily that great of a practice that it can be avoided. But if that's the only way you're going to be able to eat the prashad, then that's what you do. Okay? I'm not going to say, yes, this is great. Lord Chaitanya likens transcendental devotional service to the sowing of a seed in the heart of the living entity. There are innumerable living entities traveling throughout the different planets in the universe, and out of them there are a few who are fortunate enough to meet a pure devotee to get the chance to understand devotional service. This devotional service is just like a seed, and if it is sown in the heart of a living entity, and if he goes on hearing and chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
that seed fructifies, just as the seed of a tree fructifies with regular watering. The spiritual plant of devotional service gradually grows and grows until it penetrates the covering of the material universe and enters into the Brahma Jyoti fullness. In the spiritual sky, also that plant grows more and more until it reaches the highest planet, which is called Goloka Vrindavan, the supreme planet of Krishna. Ultimately, the plant takes shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna and rests there. Gradually, as the plant grows fruits and flowers, that plant of devotional service also produces fruits, and the watering process in the form of chanting and hearing goes on. This plant of devotional service is fully described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is explained there that when the complete plant takes shelter under the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, one becomes fully absorbed in the love of Godhead. Then he cannot live for a moment without being in contact with the Supreme Lord, just as a fish cannot live without water. In such a state, the devotee actually attains the transcendental qualities in contact. So this hearing process then will take us from the material sphere to the transcendental. On this transcendental platform, then one in the association of Krishna then is able to develop all the transcendental qualities. But that means that one is totally absorbed in always wanting to be with Krishna. Otherwise, then how will one develop this? So in other words, barring the chanting of the holy name, one comes to the platform of being so absorbed in Krishna, one doesn't want to be absorbed in anything else. One can't tolerate not being in touch with Krishna. By that position, then one is able to gain the association of Krishna, by which one then comes to the platform of pure love of God.
Maharaj, in the days of the movement, we were doing a lot of chanting in public, and we were making many devotees, and it seems like these days in many places around the world we're neglecting that public chanting. How important is the Harinam Sankirtan chanting in public?
No, it's important. It means that the holy by the Harinam, one is exposing so many, that is the Ajnana Sukriti, so many get the benefit. But it's very, very important is that devotees are very inspired in that they were very happy. Right? So people then, by seeing the devotees chanting, they were impressed by the devotees' happiness. Like that, just so they were attracted by just, their happiness in performing the process. And they're, being comfortable with devotional service. So, because the materialist is not necessarily very comfortable, he's trying to be comfortable by making various arrangements, but he's not necessarily naturally comfortable. So when they see that the devotees are like that, then it makes it very good. So that would mean that also that the type of sankirtan, you know, the harinam that the devotees are doing, also is very natural, something that they were doing it to attract the minds of others like that. That also is there. So, that all together then is a very important, a very potent form of generating the fortune of living entities who have not come in contact with Krishna consciousness or who have but haven't taken up the process. progressive development of the chanting of the holy name. Bona fide spiritual master chants the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And the transcendental sound of salvation enters into the ear of the disciple. And if the disciple follows in the footsteps of the spiritual master and chants the holy name with similar respect, he actually comes to worship the transcendental name. When the transcendental name is worshipped by the devotee, the name himself spreads his glories within the heart of the devotee. When the devotee is perfectly qualified in chanting the transcendental vibration of the holy name, he is quite fit to become a spiritual master and to deliver all the people of the world. The chanting of the holy name is so powerful that it gradually establishes its supremacy above everything in the world. The devotee who chants it becomes transcendentally situated in ecstasy that sometimes laughs, cries, and dances in ecstasy. Teachings of the time. So that by this chanting, with this chanting with respect, with attention, then the holy name himself, he will spread that transcendental. It's his glory is within the heart of the devotee. So the devotee himself becomes very attached to the chanting. And so then nothing else is more important. So that's the idea, that Krishna and his name are not different. So when the chanting of the holy name is the most important, that means being with Krishna is the most important thing. By always being with Krishna, then the living entity is very satisfied. And so this chanting with respect, having heard from the proper source, then that gives all transcendental perfection.
I had a question about chanting by devotees who are not initiated, because often the devotees ask this question whether you need to receive initiation on the chanting and whether it counts as a chanting or not.
Okay, so then you have basic point is this, there's no rules in chanting the holy name. The holy name is Bhagavad. So Bhagavad, if it's gotten from the proper source and is properly applied, it works. But now in this, so this then would deal with the element that, well, I'm not initiated, am I chanting, am I getting any benefit? So then the element is security here. So am I wasting my time or what's happening here? So no, one is getting full benefit from chanting. Because the Lord and his name are non-different. The living entity's natural position is in serving the Lord. So to be in contact with the Lord through the chanting is natural. So then that works very nicely. The other side is then the question, well, do I have to be initiated? Then that is a point of not wanting to actually surrender. Not wanting to take that responsibility in the relationship. So therefore that question comes up, because one does on the material platform, one has run into so many difficulties in relationships, one's own family or friends or those who one would consider near and dear. So therefore one is unwilling or worried about taking up another relationship that might go bad on you. So you just basically don't have faith in relationships. One shouldn't also be worried there, because the point is it's Krishna and his process. Then why that needs to be there is because Krishna says by chanting the holy name you're in direct association with Krishna, so therefore that's always beneficial, you will always advance. But as far as relationship goes, Krishna wants to have a relationship with us through other devotees, not directly. That's not what's the case. The case for Krishna is a relation with us through other devotees. Right? The grandfather does not want to have a relationship with the grandson as his own son. Right? So the point is the devotees are there, the both. So if you want to actually perfect it, establish yourself in a relationship with Krishna, then you need to have a relationship to establish it through. If that makes sense. You know, I want to be part of the family, but I don't want to commit myself to any member of the family. It doesn't work like that. And so therefore, then the process includes all this. So it works from the beginning, but the point is that it must be brought to the point of, you know, it's just like, let us say, you come into a business establishment and they're selling, their retail establishment, they're selling goods, they're selling items. Let's just say somehow or another when you walk in, you just happen to bump into the boss. So it's not that the boss is going to ignore you, talking to the boss who does get the benefit, they'll talk to this and that, but they'll get to the point where then they'll turn you over to a sales representative and they'll complete things, and then this is actually your connection to the boss. Does that make sense? You know, so it's natural that this is going to happen. You know, it's just the way it is. You know, so and then from that, then it will come back. So that connection with means by the grace of Krishna, one gets Guru. By the grace of Guru, one gets Krishna. So by the grace of the holy name, that's Krishna, then by that proper chanting, one will come in contact with all of the Guru. Then by that, then one will then have one's, reawaken one's eternal relationship.
Should our goal of life be to go back to Godhead or to please Krishna and Srila Prabhupada? Like,
so how will you go back to Godhead without pleasing Krishna?
Like,
and is Krishna or Srila Prabhupada? You understand, why does it always have to be this or that? You know, do we eat lunch or do we fast eternally? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, means absolute means is connected to Krishna. It's not that we want to go back to Godhead, we want to be qualified that if Krishna likes, we go back to Godhead. Right? In other words, so Krishna likes means he's pleased. So if you qualify to go back to Godhead, you please Krishna. You qualify yourself to go back to Godhead by pleasing Krishna. So it's up to Krishna. The point is if someone is transcendentally situated, he is already back to Godhead, even though he's here. Back to Godhead is not a physical location. It's a matter of consciousness. It's a matter of affection. Does that make sense? That's so the two go together like that. We're trying to qualify ourselves so that Krishna will be pleased, and then whatever he likes to do, that's there. But the point is by pleasing him, the natural thing is one goes back to God. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Then Prabhupada says chanting should be hard for the sake of pure devotees, and
yes.
Then one can actually face it.
Right.
But we also see from the Bhagavatam the story of Ajamila, who actually called up his dancing even though he was engrossed in the condition of life.
Uh-huh.
So how did, what I'm trying to say is, how did that work? Because he was...
How did that work and you were still sitting here? He called the sun and the Vishnu Dutas came and you're chanting and
Uncle Kamala came.
And
Uncle Kamala came.
Yes, he's also a Vishnu Duta. Yeah. Only difference when he comes, you're blue, not him. Now if you remember, Ajamiya was there. recommended to Ajahnil to name his last son, his youngest son, Narayan. Narayan. Right? So that means then the name has already been received from Narayan. But Ajahnil is unaware of this whole process. The name was received from there, so it's coming from the source. Okay. That's why it's traditionally in Namakarna, priests are involved in the name giving ceremony. The name's about something about the Lord, it's coming from the priest, and the priest is supposed to be something of some spiritual stature.
Maharaj, what about the situation of reinitiation? Is it that when someone's been initiated into Sampradaya, then louder?
Yeah.
What the situation where a devotee's been initiated into Sampradaya and his spiritual master's left and he becomes reinitiated, is that recommended, or is it that one's been initiated into Sampradaya, that's it, and he doesn't need to be initiated in Sampradaya again, or is it that he needs to be that, to be reaffirmed, or?
See, the whole idea is the difficulty with the understanding the reinitiation topic is that it is the topic of initiation. So unless one understands what initiation is, one can't understand the topic of reinitiation. Just like, you know, one understands cooking, right, you know, the heating process, and he can reheat, you know what I'm saying? So that's the problem before, is that the cooking process is not understood. So, initiation means that you are accepting someone to guide you in Krishna consciousness. So the picture of the instruction is what is most important. Now, within this, for one's purification, then there must, the pancharatric process is there as a method to purify the conditioned state of the living entity. See, the natural state of the living entity is the Bhagavad line, which means you are liberated, you're not conditioned, by hearing from an advanced person. That itself is initiation, because the liberated soul is not going to be distracted from the instruction. They're pure, they were going to be attracted to pure instruction. They will follow it. So there's no need for any kind of restriction or anything to ensure that, right? But on the, if one is conditioned, so, you know, in the conditioned state, then the pancharatric process is important, because then you have rituals and regulations that go with that, that you will properly practice the devotional process so that it is actually has effect. You know, it probably gives the example of you're rowing the boat, but you have to pick up the anchor. So the pancharatric process, the Bhagavad is the rowing the boat, the pancharatric is pulling up that anchor. So the point is once one is situated in the pancharatric process, one has received initiation, one is therefore qualified to follow the pancharatric process, then as a samskar, or as a purificatory process, that is completed. That aspect is complete. But that's not the point of initiation. That is there, you have the adhikarya, the qualification, to perform the pancharatric processes that are dynamically purifying. But the most important element of initiation is the instruction. So when the spiritual master leaves, what's lost is not the pancharatric connection, or the following of the rules, or the adhikar to perform the pancharatric rites. That's not what's lost. What's lost is the instruction. So reinitiation technically means finding someone else natural form, it actually shouldn't be a problem at all, because when you come in contact with devotional service, you don't have a specific spiritual master. So, therefore, in the association of devotees, generally many devotees are inspiring. So you're hearing from many. Then with time, one of those becomes prominent, either by regular association or by the particular just effect that it has. You know, either way, one out of the many siksha gurus chooses one who becomes the diksha guru. So that simultaneously one has the diksha guru and so many siksha gurus. A big mistake by the neophyte is to think that to be chaste in the diksha guru, I must give up all those siksha gurus. No, the diksha guru is the prominent, and these others are supporting that. But they're there. So when devotees do that, then when the spiritual master, if something happens, he leaves, then they have nothing by their own doing. But it's extremely popular, right? Because the mundane element is imposed upon the diksha somehow or another because of the ritual. It's religion. It can be understood on the material platform. So therefore, they add into it all their own speculations and, you know, things like that. And generally, by their playing with it, create their own extinction. You know, it's just like, let's say, like in India, the Rudra Veena is considered, of all the musical instruments, the most, you know, the stringed instruments, the most elevated and respected. So then what happened is that they all have such reverence for it, then they'll, you know, have a false ego, won't let their students work with it, you know, because they're not good enough, because it's so special. Or the people who then make them won't work with them because they're so respected that, you know, you have to wash your hands after you smoke your beanie and stuff like that. And so therefore then they get to the point where they don't want to work with it. So in this way, the Rudra Veena becomes extinct as a musical instrument in India just because of the neophyte's perspective. It doesn't need to be. You know what I'm saying? So devotees do the same thing, you know, like that. You know, it's just like, let's say, the Pancharatric rule, and Pancharatra is very strict. It's like after you eat, the clothes that you were, it means as long as you washed your hands, mouth, and feet, you know, didn't dribble all over yourself, then the clothes that you are wearing when you eat, those can't be worn into the deity room. You change clothes into pure clothes, then you go into the deity room. But then devotees in there, you know, we're being so strict, we have such high standards, then they say you have to take a full bath. And where does Prabhupada ever say you have to take a full bath? And so therefore then many devotees either want to get sick or don't want to be involved in the process. And so for their high standard, then they lose the standard. And then they have, you know, first initiates or uninitiates worshiping the deity. And then if you ask them, oh, well, you know, we don't use those standards. You know, it's just kind of like as if there's an option. You know, like that. You know. So, you know, oh, you have so many girls in your temple, they're all married. I see them with the boys and all that. Nice that you could arrange your marriages. No, no, we don't use those standards here, you know. We're not fanatic. You know what I'm saying? So the neophyte has to be very careful about generating his own religion. He's not qualified. God's qualified, not us. So the natural thing is to take shelter of those people that one already had a sexual relationship with. If one has been so foolish to cut that off due to his neophyte, then one should reestablish those. And then from that, then the same process, that someone from amongst there becomes prominent, that becomes the person who is then you would say the spiritual master. So if one asks who's your spiritual master, then you'll say who's the spiritual guru. But it doesn't mean that there is a need of reinitiation, because reinitiation is on the Pancharatric platform. And Pancharatra doesn't require it. It requires reconnecting yourself to someone who's going to give you the siksha. Right? Now, that's very nice as we see for those who are mature in philosophical understanding. For those who the ritual is all in all, then by a re-initiation, re-acceptance of the Diksha Guru, they feel purified and satisfied because the spiritual master has gone away, then they feel contaminated because of their attachment to mundane morality. You understand? So in other words, it's not wrong to use the reinitiation process in the way of Diksha because of the mundane perspective of the common devotee. Right? But at the same time, it's not required, because Pancharatra doesn't require it at all. Like that, there's no way to show that it's required. No other sampradaya uses reinitiation like that. They simply use, you connect yourself to another advanced devotee, you know, through instruction. That's the process. But the point is it's not wrong because of the perspective of the disciple to go through the process again, but it's unnecessary because we see as we do that, and then you end up with, like in Italy, where they say, you know, what is it, you know, you say buy 10, get one free, you know. So, you know, it's not important. In the beginning, it was geared for the neophyte devotee, but the problem is the movement has a lot of devotees who are not. So it's not very universal. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that some devotees they feel comfortable with listening from one person. You know, like to say, you can't call not many names. No,
that's all right. As long as if they're comfortable with it and it naturally happens, that's okay. But to say that it's unchaste to hear from other advanced devotees, that's improper.
I see it goes to extremes, the devotees, they don't go to class to any other gurus, they don't go to class to any other devotees, they don't.
Yes, so that's improper. The point is that it's natural that you'll hear from it. It's like you have someone in the family, you have your father, but it's not that you don't have, you know, you don't like being with some uncles or cousins or like that, but they never replace your father. You have to have that discrimination. So my point is that if the only one you like hearing from is your spiritual master, then that's fine. But if before you took initiation, you had another 5-6 devotees you like hearing from, and then after getting initiation, then either you come up with the right idea, or someone else tells you, oh, it's not chaste, you're still listening to, but your spiritual master says, it's a common thing. It comes up from the ego of the neophyte, that, you know, they feel very advanced and very holier than now. That's always the difficulty of the neophyte, is this holier than now element. So that's why it's recommended that one gets through this purificatory process. As we see here is what Lord Chaitanya is talking about, dynamic before that. When one is encouraged in devotional service by association with devotees, we become free from all unwanted contamination, so it's right immediately. Then, by following the regular principles and chanting hearing, when it's free from all unwanted contamination, he advances with firm faith. Right? Then it's firm faith, then nothing can shake it. So he doesn't have to use all these little neophyte tricks. When firm faith and devotional service awakens, the taste for hearing and chanting also awakens. Now you have a taste, so it becomes dynamic. After taste is awakened, deep attachment. From that attachment, the seed of love for Krishna grows in the heart. When that ecstatic emotional state is intensified, it's called love of God. Such love is the life's ultimate goal and reservoir of all pleasure. So we find that the prominence is on the other side of neophyte. Right? It starts, it means you have Shraddha to Prema. You have 9 stages. So the first 3 are within the neophyte. 6 are beyond that. And the ones that are sick, that's where the real taste is. That's where it's the dynamism of it really is. So that's why I make the point, is because otherwise sometimes we're just very comfortable with our little positions and our little politics and our little authority and our little, you know, scaring others with, you know, devotional ultimatums, you know, and stuff like that.
I see the openness mentality also.
brings turns into practical situations as well, because often we, as you said, we're afraid to surrender, and often our guru is omnipresent, so therefore we listen only from them. Because, you know, we don't want to listen to Bhagavad, right? Because they know it. When the gurus, they open these a few days a year,
I think
you listen only from them. You know, otherwise the whole year we don't listen to anyone.
Yeah, the point is Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out there's three levels of siksha. That of the Adi Guru, you know, which is Srila Prabhupada for us. Then there's the Sadguru, which is the initiating spiritual master, or anyone else who they themselves are personally taking responsibility to take you back to Godhead. Then it's any of all the preachers. So that will include, you know, your local authorities, your local preachers, any other preachers who always are coming through like this. So one needs to take advantage of all three levels of siksha like that. Naturally, the surrender is the greatest in the higher ones because that's always there. If you're working in a particular temple, then the temple president will give you instruction because you work in this temple. But if you move to another temple, it's not that he's obliged to instruct you anymore unless he comes to visit. It's not like the spiritual master is taking that eternal commitment. But while you're there in that jurisdiction, it has great value because he is there, he is seeing that the service is going on, so therefore you want to take advantage of that. A whole bunch of joggers need to stop at the light, then they all kind of like bend down and jump up in the air, and the whole group, and then as soon as the light changes, then they all jog across. Anything else?
Yeah.
How does one? The main thing is by chanting and associating with devotees following the devotional process. Transcendentally situated means we can start to see things in relationship to Krishna. Right? In other words, we're not just seeing due to our own attachment, our own mind. Right? I mean, that's why we will be looking at whatever we look at in this world. That's what we start with. The transcendentally situated means we start to be able to distinguish between Maya and the application of Krishna's service. So when we can see things in the light of Krishna consciousness, that is a symptom of becoming transcendentally situated. Is that done?
Maharaj, what degree or what extent is personal responsibility in how to engage oneself in devotional service and a priority, and how much is it that one should surrender to an authority?
You have to have both. It depends on your position. You know, a brahmachari living in the temple, it'll be the surrender is the basis, but he should be vocal if he somehow or another considers that he's not rightly situated, but at the same time it's because of that surrender that the authorities will discuss it, and if it's shown that he is rightly situated, then that's fine. And if it's not, then now they're aware of other aspects so they can make the decision. The temple authorities, they try to see that everybody is situated according to their nature, his body, mind, and words. So it may be due to lack of experience, the brahmachari thinks he's not, but he actually is. You know, or it could be there's some element that the authorities don't know about, and now he brings it to light, so that can be calculated into the equation. But if someone's a grihasta like this living outside, then much more they have to take responsibility because the authority is not there to tell them what to do. So that's would be naturally. You know, so it depends upon your situation. But ultimately, in all cases, we're all surrendered to spiritual master, to Srila Prabhupada, to Krishna, to the devotional process, to the mission, like that. Then it's just a matter of how much responsibility we're taking within that to get God, and how much, you know, we're, you know, dependent on others to do that for us. So it's individual. Okay.
Yeah, just one point on that. Is there a consideration that, for instance, we're in an institution where not necessarily everyone shares the same vision on how to engage a brahmachari. So if a brahmachari has been engaged with vaishya tendencies or brahminical tendencies, should the brahmachari be aware of?
It means at some point they should be aware, but in the beginning it may be too much. Like when you come and you need to wash pots, then basically you need to know, understand the principles of cleanliness. When the heart is purified, these things start to make sense. Otherwise, how do you understand what that means? You know, if there's a vaishya nature, then the point is that money has to cross over their palm, right? So then, whether it's their money or someone else's, they're going to be happy moving in something that deals with money. That's all. So therefore, until they're purified, how will they actually understand that? You know. So it's just a matter of balancing between the actual awareness of the individual and the awareness of the authorities. You know. So as one becomes purified, one is more aware. Then one can appreciate being guided. Otherwise, it would be very generic, you know. Because what you can see in the devotional process, as everyone who comes to Krishna consciousness are very similar in mentality, but as they practice, then they become uniquely different, right? While in the impersonal schools, they come in as individuals and they go out, and you know, they go through the same, you know, they come out the same little walk.
Yeah.
Yeah.